Today's lesson is going to be the final one in our study in the book of Joshua. I want to offer just a quick recap of what we've studied over the last 6 or 7 weeks. First of all, we talked about Joshua chapter 1. There we have the call of Joshua. We're reminded of those words, or I'd like to remind you of those words that the Lord shares with Joshua as he calls him to follow in the footsteps of Moses. He tells him over and over again, be strong and courageous. He also tells him, God speaking to Joshua, that God will be present with Joshua as he leads the Israelites into the land that God has promised his people. That promise of presence is crucial to Joshua's leadership among the people. Then in chapter 2, we read about this prostitute, Rahab, and her faith. She declared that God is heaven, or as God is Lord of heaven and earth, a faithful proclamation from a Canaanite, no less. And then in chapters 3 and 4, we talked about the Israelites crossing the Jordan River, moving into their new land. And as they moved into that new land, they celebrated Passover. They also practiced circumcision. Through these actions, they were reminding themselves that it was ultimately about God's protection and leadership as they moved into the new land. In chapters 5 and 6, we read about them defeating Jericho. And then in chapter 7, we talked about Achan's sin and the death that Achan suffered because of that sin, along with Achan's family. And that's what we talked about last week. In chapters 8 through 12, I'm just going to offer a short, I guess, summary of those chapters. In chapters 8 through 12, the Israelite army moves into the land, and as they do so, they're defeating army after army. Remember that there were people that were residing in the promised land when the Israelites moved into that new land. And so under the leadership of Joshua and primarily God, they fought battle after battle, removing people from the land so that they could enjoy the land that was promised to them from God. And then in chapters 13 through 22, a great amount of attention is offered concerning the division of the land. And so you have these 12 tribes that moved in, representing thousands and thousands of people. And so as they move into this new territory, the land was broken up. It was divided into sections for the people. And so in chapters 13 through 22, we read about the division of the land. And so that brings us to chapter 23, and that's where we're going to camp out this morning. These words that we're going to read today in chapter 23 and a short bit from chapter 24 as well, these are some of Joshua's last words to the Israelites. And so these are important words, well-documented words from Joshua. And so we want to pay close attention to what Joshua has to say to the people and what the Lord is saying to us today as well. As we read through this message today, this morning, I'd like us to keep our eye out for two things. The first thing is Joshua's understanding of the Lord's activity among the people. So we want to pay attention to that. What Joshua says about how God has been interacting and relating with the people over the last many, many years. So that's number one, Joshua's understanding of the Lord's activity. And then number two is notice what Joshua says about how the Israelites should live in this new situation that they're experiencing. Okay, let's go ahead and jump in. Joshua 23, verses 1 through 3. After a long time had passed and the Lord had given Israel rest from all their enemies around them, Joshua, by then a very old man, summoned all Israel, their elders, leaders, judges, and officials, and said to them, "I am very old. You yourselves have seen everything the Lord your God has done to all these nations for your sake. It was the Lord your God who fought for you." Remember what we said. Pay attention to what Joshua says about the Lord's activity. It was the Lord your God who fought for you. For a moment, turn over to Joshua chapter 10, verses 12 through 14. In Joshua chapter 10, there is a great detail given about Israel's battle against the Amorites. In Joshua chapter 10, verses 12 through 14, I want us to notice the language that is used here to talk about the God's activity for the people in this battle against the Amorites. So Joshua 10, 12 through 14. On the day the Lord gave the Amorites over to Israel, Joshua said to the Lord in the presence of Israel, "Sun, stand still over Gibeon, and you, moon, over the valley of Ajalon." So the sun stood still, and the moon stopped, till the nation avenged itself on its enemies, as is written in the book of Jasher. The sun stopped in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. There has never been a day like it before or since, a day when the Lord listened to a human being. Surely the Lord was fighting for Israel. You see what God was doing for the people? Fighting for them, making the sun stand still and causing the moon to stop. There can be no doubt that it is God that is fighting for his people. God is acting on behalf of his people. God is faithful to his people. Back to chapter 23, verses 4 and 5. "Remember how I have allotted as an inheritance for your tribes all the lands of the nations that remain, the nations I conquered between the Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea in the west. The Lord your God himself will push them out for your sake. He will drive them out before you," talking about the Lord's activity, "and you will take possession of their land as the Lord your God has promised you." The Lord your God, this is verse 5 again, "the Lord your God himself will push them out for your sake. He will drive them out before you." Continuing on, verses 6 through 8. "Be very strong. Be careful to obey all that is written in the book of the law of Moses without turning aside to the right or to the left." Does this sound familiar? Sound a little bit like Joshua chapter 1? Joshua's commission to be the leader. God had told Joshua, be strong, be courageous, and be careful to listen to the word of the law. Verse 7, "Do not associate with these nations that remain among you. Do not invoke the names of their gods or swear by them. You must not serve them or bow down to them. But you are to hold fast to the Lord your God as you have until now." So we've talked about the Lord's activity amongst the people. And now we talk about how the people are to relate to God, how they are to live. They aren't to associate with these nations that remain among them. They aren't to invoke the names of their gods or swear by them. They mustn't serve or bow down to these foreign gods. That's how they are to live. Verses 9 through 11, continuing on. "The Lord has driven out before you great and powerful nations," the Lord's activity. "To this day, no one has been able to stand withstand you. One of you routs 1,000 because the Lord your God fights for you just as he has promised. So be very careful to love the Lord your God." More about how the people are to respond to God. Be very careful to love the Lord your God. Continuing on, 12 and 13. "But if you turn away and ally yourselves with the survivors of these nations that remain among you, and if you intermarry with them and associate with them, then you may be sure that the Lord your God will no longer drive out these nations before you. Instead, they will become like snares and traps for you, whips on your backs and thorns in your eyes, until you perish from this good land which the Lord your God has given you." God is fighting for them, but they are to remain faithful to God, worshiping him alone. Verses 14 through 16. "Now I am about to go the way of all the earth. You know with all your heart and soul that not one of all the good promises the Lord your God gave you has failed. Every promise has been fulfilled. Not one has failed. But just as all the good things the Lord your God has promised you have come to you, so he will bring on you all the evil things he has threatened until the Lord your God has destroyed you from this good land he has given you. And then the first word of verse 16 is so very important. There's a strong warning that is offered. And then the first word of verse 16, if you violate the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them, the Lord's anger will burn against you, and you will quickly perish from the good land he has given you. How are the people to relate to God? They are to worship him alone. And so I want to highlight two passages again for us. One we just read, verse 16. The other is verse 7. Verse 7, do not... So what Joshua says to the people, do not associate with these nations that remain among you. Do not invoke the names of their gods or swear by them. You must not serve them or bow down to them. It's verse 7 and then verse 16 again. If you violate the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them, the Lord's anger will burn against you and you will quickly perish from the good land he has given you. And so we recall the words of Moses found in Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 16 through 18. So keep verses 7 and 16 in the back of your mind, okay, what we just read. And now hear what Moses says in Deuteronomy chapter 20, verses 16 through 18. This is so very important to what we're talking about this morning. This is well before the time when they're going to come into the promised land, okay? This is what they're told. However, in the cities of the nations the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, do not leave alive anything that breathes. Completely destroy them, the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, as the Lord your God has commanded you. Otherwise, they will teach you to follow all the detestable things they do in worshiping their gods, and you will sin against the Lord your God. And so, the impetus for driving out the people was this risk of adopting the worship practices of the people who were already residing in the land. And so they're told by Moses, they're reminded about this by Joshua, that they are not to give themselves over to the worship of these gods, these small g gods. And there were many, many of them that the peoples of that time worshipped. So it's important to point out that the Israelites didn't clear out the land. You can read about that in back in chapters 13 through 22. So you go through and you read about the division of the land. Many times in those passages, it talks about, but such and such people remained in that land. Such and such people remained in that land. It's really important. A question. Why is it so crucial? Why is it such a big deal for the people to avoid worshiping the foreign gods? Why is that so important? Why does that get so much attention by Joshua and Moses and obviously God himself? The first thing I'd say to that question is it undermines of God, the Israelites' mission of displaying God's way in the world. It undermines their mission. There's a term for this, the Missio Dei. The mission of God that the Israelites were living in, it undermines that if they are worshiping the foreign gods. We remember the call of Abram, right, in Genesis chapter 12. We want to think about the mission of God spoken to Abram. Genesis 12, 1 through 3. The Lord had said to Abram, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. The Israelites were participating in a great mission. But if they were to give themselves to worshiping of foreign gods, they would undermine that mission. They would not be faithful to the covenant. They wouldn't be faithful to God. And so they are to worship God alone. It's so very important for their health and vitality. Not really just for the Israelites, but for the potential message that they were going to share with others. Another response I would share is that idol worship, it warps spiritual formation. Have you ever heard the phrase, you are what you worship? You are what you worship. I think it's the case because the object of our worship, it requires time and energy and thought, and we start to become like what it is that we worship. And this is incredibly problematic, of course. So Joshua feared that the Israelites would adopt the practices of those around him. That's why he says it several times in this farewell speech. Don't adopt their practices. We're not that much different than the Israelites that Joshua was addressing. The word of God is living and active, and it's the case with what Joshua says to the people about worshiping foreign gods. We live in a land that is full of gods. Gods are vying for our attention, for our allegiance. And so Joshua's words, they ring true to us today. Worship the Lord alone. Only worship God. So one of the main ways that we Let me go ahead and get these all out first. I think one of the ways that we practice idolatry in our lives today, I think there are all kinds of different ways, but it's one word. Compartmentalization happens in our lives so often. And so we have like our family, right? Our family is important to us. But what can happen is that we worship God, we praise Him, we study His Word, we pray to Him, but our relationship with God doesn't influence how we interact with our family. And so it's like we have this little compartment over here called family. We worship God, we have what we do on Sundays, but it really doesn't touch how we interact with our family. You can think about this in a lot of different ways. Be very similar with our friends. We're one way with one group of people, but we're a completely different way with another group of people. That's compartmentalization, right? So we have our family life. We have our friend life. Perhaps we have our work life, right? So we're one way in these different compartments, and we're another way over here at work. So we claim that we're a Christian, we believe in God, but we don't allow our faith to influence how we approach what we do for our job, what we do in work. One way of saying it is we ought to be a Christian who is an electrician, a Christian who is an engineer, a Christian who is a cashier. But what ends up happening instead is we flip it around. We say, I'm a student who happens to be a Christian. I'm an employee who happens to be a Christian. And so we have these different compartments. We even have our church compartment. We're really solid when it comes to the church department, right? We've got it all bundled up, all looking real clean and tidy. But then again, it doesn't hit the other compartments in our life. And we could go on and on. How about alone time? Again, we're one way at church. We're one way with our family. We're one way with our friends. But with our alone time, we don't honor God with that time, perhaps. In recreation, this one stepped all over my toes. And no comment from Howard on this one, as we golf together quite a bit. But again, we aren't allowing our relationship with God to influence how we are in this way. And so what happens, why I'd say that this is so closely related to idolatry, is we haven't allowed the Lord to rule our entire being. And really, who we have named as Lord is ourselves. We say we can dictate how we spend our time. We can dictate how we talk. We can dictate how we interact with others. We dictate how we use our private time. We have not allowed the Lord to be Lord of our entire being. And so this is how it ought to be. So let this container here represent our lives. Serving the Lord only. This is who we are. Our faith, what we're doing right now, is going to have a great influence on what we're doing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. And so, our family life, it goes in this container. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, who happens to be Sarah's husband and Adeline and Audrey's dad. Makes a big difference. Our work lives. You are a student. You are an employee. First of all, you are a follower of Jesus Christ. You are a faithful servant of God. Church, it all goes in here. And by the way, with this church container, we have this idea, I think, which is actually a form of idolatry too, if we really get to the heart of it. We have this idea that we can kind of put on a mask when we come to this place, and we can again kind of clean ourselves up, make things real tidy. I think that's perhaps idolizing perfection, idolizing what others are going to think about us. But in church, we come as we are. Our alone time. Again, this is, as a guy, as someone who has worked in young adults ministry and youth ministry, this one, a lot of the young men that I work with, God had their Sunday mornings, their Sunday nights, their Bible study time, but it was the alone time. They said, God, I'm good with you in all other compartments of my life, but would you just leave me alone when it comes to this compartment of my life? That's idolatry. And then recreation as well. I'm a Christian who happens to enjoy golf. That shapes my attitude and my mindset and the way that I talk on the golf course. Did you all hear the story about Adam LaRoche? This is a sports story. It's just come out in the last few days. There are a lot of opinions surrounding Adam LaRoche's decision. Let me give you a little bit of context. So Adam LaRoche is a longtime baseball player. I think he's had over a 10-year career, and now he is playing with the Chicago White Sox. He has always had his son join him for practices, join him in the clubhouse. And so it seems odd, but there's been other players that have done this from time to time. So like wherever Adam was, as far as practice goes, even with spring training, there his son was with him as well. All the other players, his teammates, were totally cool with it. Everything was good. The White Sox management came to Adam LaRoche, the baseball player, and he said, listen, your son has been coming around the clubhouse, has been interacting with our team just too much. Can you dial it back some? Can you dial it back? Considerably back. What Adam LaRoche did is he said, you know what? My son has always been with me for baseball practices and all that I've done with baseball, and I want it to stay that way. I'm not going to dial it back. No thank you. But what I am going to do is I'm going to retire from baseball. He gave up a $13 million contract. $13 million because the White Sox management said, you're having your son around too much. Now, there's all kinds of discussions surrounding this. You know, should a 13 or 14-year-old boy be spending that much time with a baseball team? Who knows about the morals and character of those that he's interacting with? All kinds of different discussion. I don't want to get into that, but I just saw this morning that Adam LaRoche offered a statement on his decision. I want you to hear what he said. This is the baseball player. Baseball has taught me countless life lessons. I've learned how to face challenges, how to overcome failure, how to maintain humility, and most importantly, to trust that the Lord is in control and that I was put here to do more than play a game of baseball. We are called to live life with an unwavering love for God and love for each other. These are lessons I try to teach my kids every day. I truly am blessed to have been granted each of those experiences. Thank you all to my previous managers, past teammates, and friends across the league for making these past 12 years such a wonderful journey and for providing me with memories that I will never forget, especially the ones with my son by my side. I will leave you with the same advice that I left my teammates. In life, we're all faced with difficult decisions and we'll have to have choices to make. Do we act based on the consequences or do we act on what we know and believe in our hearts to be right? I choose the latter. So whatever you think about Adam LaRoche's decision, you have to say, when it comes to these compartments, family, work, recreation, we might say, we have to say, that they were all in this container. He was looking at that situation through a lens of faith, and you've got to give him credit for that. You've got to give him credit for that. There's two farewell speeches here. There's one in 23 that we've just looked at. And then in 24, Joshua addresses the people again. And that's where we see that passage that is so often quoted, and rightfully so, from Joshua. He's addressing the people again. He's saying many of the same things that he says in chapter 23. And then in verses 14 and 15 of Joshua 24, he says this: "Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods your ancestors worshiped beyond the Euphrates River and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." And so Joshua, as the leader, says you must make a choice. He says you can't serve them both. You have to make a choice. And Joshua says, "I want you to know as your leader that as for me and my household, we are going to serve the Lord." No matter what choice those other people make, those Israelites that he's been leading make, for Joshua and his household, it was absolutely certain they were going to serve the Lord. And so can you say, as for you and your household, you are going to serve the Lord alone? Dads, can you say, as for me and my household, we are going to serve the Lord alone? Moms, are you going to say, as for me and my household, we're going to serve the Lord? As for us as a congregation of the Lord's people, we say, as for me and this church, we are going to serve the Lord wholeheartedly. And as we do this, I believe that we will grow a heart that's more like God's heart. We will walk in the way of Jesus. We will be more compassionate. We will love, serve, share, and care. We will be a blessing, just like that promise that God made to Abraham. "I will bless you, and through you, all peoples will be blessed." I'd like to end with grace. Despite our hurts, our failings, our struggles, despite all of that, I don't know your story. I know all of us have things that we've done that we're not proud of. Perhaps even today, you've kind of limped into service. God still uses you. God uses me. God uses us. The Israelites struggled. Israel means wrestler, right? Walking with a limp. And yet, God used them. God will use all of us for His purpose as we faithfully serve Him and serve Him alone. If there's anybody here today that desires the prayers of the church family, we would be honored to pray with you and for you. If there's anybody here today that is ready to put Jesus on in baptism, just like Malik did last week, we would be overjoyed to witness someone come to Christ today. So whatever need that you have, you can come forward now as we stand and continue to worship the one true God.